Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives, so please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, May 14th, and a lot of news happening for the economy, for the global trade deals with the United States, and also a $600 billion investment in the United States that Donald Trump has now secured from Saudi Arabia. So this coming from the White House. The deals celebrated today are historic and transformative for both countries and represent a new golden era of partnership between the United States and Saudi Arabia. From day one, President Trump's America First trade and investment policy has put the American economy, the American worker, and our national security first, underscoring our commitment to strengthening our defense and security partnership. The United States and Saudi Arabia signed the largest defense sales agreement in history, nearly $142 billion, providing Saudi Arabia with state-of-the-art warfighting equipment and services from over a dozen U.S. defense firms. So this also coming amidst the, as the Wall Street Journal headline says, a surprise U.S.-China trade deal, which gives a global economy reprieve. And so the stock market is rebounding compared to all of the concerns around tariffs. Some on, of course, the leftist media and Democrat side are suggesting that Trump has caved to China, and others on the conservative, more of the MAGA side, are suggesting that this was Trump's plan all along. So what do we make of all of this? Well, let's welcome in Tho Bishop, who is the communications director of communications at the Mises Institute. And Tho, where do you want to start?
Yeah, good morning, Jenna. Trump's definitely been in, you know, let's make a deal mode. seeing the foreign policy space is kicking up in a lot of interesting ways. We're seeing these investment deals. We're seeing, you know, the original tariff rollback for the rest of the world, now the China one. And I think it's interesting in terms of there's a domestic angle to it where confidence, right, with where the direction is going, both from consumers and from the business community. I think the business community is pretty happy right now. My concern is there's still going to be some lagging effects from the tariffs that we've seen. We've seen like the lower shipping. What's that capacity going to look like in a couple months? The ramification of this off-on approach there. And how does that affect consumer prices in the future, and you know how that impacts kind of general sentiment? But right now, I think that the people are liking the deals getting done, and that obviously has a positive effect in the short term. Whether the long-term consequences of spending and all that, that's we're going to see how that plays up in the legislature. But I think right now, a lot of reasons for good headlines right now for the administration.
Yeah, and so with this trade deal with China, I mean, it's a temporary reprieve on the mutual tariffs. And so is this leading to more negotiations and kind of a bigger deal, or what can we expect from that, and how is the market reacting?
It definitely sounds like the start of, you know, we'll see how these negotiations go. I'm sure they'll, you know, it's not going to be smooth sailing all the time. I would expect, based off the historical pattern, with when Treasury Secretary Mnuchin was making some of these sort of deals within the first term. But the market responses, you know, they always wanted the tariffs gone. So I think that's why you're seeing the markets respond as they will right now. And I think if there's any further improvement of relations, if there's, you know, significant gains lasting in that trade relationship, that's one of the great ironies, I think, with some of the messaging of the tariff situation, is that if the goal was to help normalize and equalize the playing field, then you get more trade. And that itself as the end goal there was something that I think that was, goes to some of the confusion in terms of certain, some of the narratives about tariff revenue as a source, these trade deals as a source. So, you know, the steps with China right now, I think, are very interesting in terms of definitely embracing the trade, the pro-trade narrative there, which, again, obviously stocks are going to respond quite positively to.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Tho Bishop from the Mises Institute. And, you know, you mentioned there's, you know, confusion over tariffs, where exactly we're going. And I think there's confusion even in how the media, of course, spun the narrative and what they're talking about with the agreement with China. Because just two headlines from yesterday, CNN says how Trump managed to get his much-needed China trade victory. And then Bloomberg says China's defiance pays off as Trump meets most of China's trade demands. So I think and then Bloomberg also was saying 2 hours ago, the China trade deal doesn't solve the Fed's problem. And so I think that there's still a lot of confusion from the average American as to what's going on with tariffs, with China, and with the economy. And so do you think that that hesitation and maybe lack of overall understanding is still causing hesitation for people to be convinced to continue to invest in the market and to feel economic stability? And will that have an overall consequences? We're kind of, you know, we're mid-year and we're starting to head into the midterms territory.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's definitely confusion in the rollout. And you'd get different statements from Lutnick and from Bessette. And I think that definitely created kind of a regime instability sort of concern in terms of, you know, exactly what is the end goal there. I think that, again, in the short term, and I, you know, going to like the Bloomberg article about how this isn't these trade deals don't necessarily solve the larger problem, the tension that the Fed has, things like that. All of that is absolutely true. You know, but I think what's interesting right now, and I think this plays into the midterm dynamic of it, and the midterm dynamic of it is important in just from an agenda building standpoint, right? Is that, you know, I think that if there's the ability to combine normalization on economic policy, even if that goes against perhaps some campaign promises in the short term, combined with competency in foreign policy deals, that might be able to have a lot of domestic political power, which could then help perhaps get more seriously, theoretically, with spending or some of those more unpopular moves down the line when you can get past that midterm pressure point. The problem, of course, with that entire calculation is that, you know, while the Trump administration might be getting more and more competent as the administration goes on, Congress is as much of a joke right now as that it's ever been. And so until some of the real big stresses that the Fed has to deal with, things like that, always are going to come back to the spending issue. And the discipline of the spending issue right now with the negotiations on the big, beautiful bill are, you know, that's not where you're getting conservative leadership. You're getting it from, I think, some of the actors in the Trump administration right now.
Yeah, and former Congressman Bob Good, he's a frequent guest on this show, and, you know, definitely a conservative, is calling it the big ugly bill and is suggesting that it's really not doing anything in terms of cutting spending or anything really that the GOP majority needs to focus on. And so is this more of a show and kind of a PR kind of piece of legislation, or is this something that, you know, maybe the critics like Bob Good, Representative Chip Roy, has come out, you know, kind of really slamming it, that Republicans and conservatives really need to take a hard look at?
Yeah, no, I mean, the way that this spending bill has been made from the get-go, you know, it's been awful. And it's going to be inherently inadequate for what is really needed going forward, because the majority of Republicans in Congress have no real interest in cutting spending once it actually, you know, recognizes, you know, once it falls into the trap that happens all the time in D.C., is now it's identifying ways, rationalizing ways for your special spending to be essential to, you know, the American cause, right? And so that is the larger problem, is that there's no ideological will from the majority of Republicans in D.C. to get serious about these issues. I don't see what's going to change about that in the near future. I do think some of the ideas being talked about, you know, again, if you're able to deliver on some of the campaign promises, like no tax on tips, Social Security, the tax-free savings plan that's been talked about, you know, there could be some positive policies from that. I think be particularly popular in that the midterm dynamic there. But you know, again, just there's going to be no, we already know the battle has been lost on spending at this point, just because of the amount of leverage that those that really, I think, would expand the budget they want to. But again, the majority just don't have any stomach for that sort of battle right now.
Yeah, and I actually posted yesterday on X, this is why the GOP is utterly useless, and a screen grab from Maria Bartiromo's Sunday Morning Futures on Fox, and it was a photo of all of the Senate Republicans voting against codifying DOGE foreign aid spending cuts, and, you know, there's like probably two dozen senators here, and it clearly shows that their priorities are not aligned with the American people or with the Trump mandate that the American people gave to the Trump agenda. And so I think this is really frustrating for Americans to see, okay, we turned out, we voted and elected President Trump overwhelmingly, and then have a majority in both houses, and so we have this trifecta, slim of a margin as it is, but they're not even doing half of what they could. They're not doing a fraction of what they could, and there continues to be all of these GOP members that are opposing simple things like DOGE spending cuts, and that seems to be at cross purposes with the mandate from November of 2024.
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is the way of the a further demonstration just how particularly useful this group of Congress is that even if, again, trying to get a deal, you know, that will pass the Senate, if you want sort of stuff, right, you know, there's a lot of heavy lifting that would have to go into making the sort of economic cuts that we need, spending cuts that we need. But there's no use to even try to have a strong public stance from anyone in leadership to even start moving changing the conversation on it at all. But the bigger indictment is just the lack of hearings in terms of accountability aspects for a variety of you know, particularly Biden era sort of issues. So there's been just a severe, I think, you know, as you said, a failure to live up to the mandate that the voters sent. The Republican Party is still way behind Trump, some of the governors out there, in terms of, you know, actually fulfilling taking both at the economic level, but also just the accountability level, taking it back to the deep state. It's disappointing to see.
Yeah, well, and in the last few minutes I have with you, Tho Bishop, who is with the Mises Institute, I do want to get your commentary on the specifically on the Saudi Arabia investment in the United States, a $600 billion investment. A lot of this is focused on weapons, but then also there's a significant investment in AI. Is this a good deal overall?
You know, it's we'll see it see how it pays off in the future. But clearly, this is part of a more broader Middle Eastern pivot from the Trump administration that I think will package this with a variety of other goals in the area. So again, it's very easy to, you know, this is not the give me the biggest warm and fuzzies about, you know, AI with Saudi Arabia, but this is clearly part of a much larger agenda going on right now.
Yeah, and I had another commentator yesterday saying that this is suggesting, you know, trying to get more of the Middle Eastern countries into the Abrahamic Accords, and this is kind of trying to, you know, a much bigger picture for Trump. I think that's a generous estimation. It's probably, or at least a favorable one, regardless of, you know, some of the critics that maybe are a little more concerned, especially with the Boeing jet from Qatar that seems to me to be at minimum a national security risk. Whether or not it violates the Emoluments Clause, I think, is a little bit of a tangential kind of non-issue. And the Democrats love to point at the Constitution and uphold it textually when they think that they can, and then otherwise they just ignore it completely when it serves their purposes. But overall, I think this is going to be a really interesting issue to wait and see what this agreement looks like and how this is all fleshing out, and especially where the economy will be as we head into the midterms. That's going to be a significant voting issue for the American people, especially with the emphasis that President Trump has placed on all of these trade deals and the emphasis the media has shown to the economy, which, of course, Americans just pay attention to then at that point. But though Bishop, really appreciate your commentary this morning. You can follow him on X. I'd encourage you to do that and also follow the Mises Institute. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Jenna Ellis, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network clinics saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Your love can save a life.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And Donald Trump has issued yet another warning to Iran that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. So this coming from Reuters, U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday called Iran, quote, the most destructive force, unquote, in the Middle East, blaming Tehran for instability across the region and warning that the United States will never allow it to obtain a nuclear weapon, offering what he described as both a final warning and a potential opening for diplomacy. Trump said Iran has a choice between continuing its chaos and terror or embracing a path toward peace. He said, I want to make a deal with Iran, but if Iran's leadership rejects this olive branch, we will have no choice but to inflict massive maximum pressure. Speaking at an investment summit in the Saudi capital, Trump warned that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon and said his offer for a deal won't last forever. So Trump does seem like the deal maker in chief. Let's welcome in Representative Marlon Stutzman from Congress in Indiana's great third district. And so Trump seems to be this kind of deal maker in chief, Representative, and is he getting the right deals accomplished?
Hey, good to be with you again this morning, Jenna. Great question. And I think that's what we'll all find out over time, short term and long term. But here, I was over in Syria a couple of weeks ago over the Easter, and I just was amazed, just the feeling of traveling over in the Middle East, how much respect President Trump has. And I think that's what goes a long way in these deal makings, is that people know President Trump is going to do what he says he's going to do. And if he offers you an olive branch, you may take it. If you don't, and just like Iran, they're going to go ahead and continue to build out their nuclear program, watch out, because President Trump is also the type that'll bring the hammer down hard. And there will be consequences if you do what is not in the best interest of their own people, but of course also for the best interest of the Middle East and America and our allies.
And so where is the balance here? Because obviously the American people with the Trump mandate want an America first kind of deal. And even a lot of conservatives are concerned. And I've seen some of these questions on, social media and other types of channels that are asking why Trump is getting so cozy with Qatar, for example, and, this Boeing jet and some of these trade deals, and even his speech seemed to be very populist, but taking kind of a shot at potentially the neoconservative position, but at least the kind of interventionalist approach and suggesting that we need to spread democracy and actually saying, these leaders know what they should be doing for their own countries, which seemed to be a little bit at cross purposes with at least what A lot of the MAGA underpinning has expected from Trump.
You know, what I also found interesting is how many folks in other countries don't want to do business with China. So I think, actually, Jenna, a lot of this goes back to the whole tariff policy that Trump has enacted, that other countries see an opportunity to do more trade with the United States. I mean, we are the largest economy in the world. China is obviously building fast, but at the same time, people don't like doing business with China because they cheat and they steal and they manipulate. I heard that in Saudi Arabia back when I was there in 2014. We had a long, serious conversation about what happened, from 9/11 and the fact that Saudis allowed for Osama bin Laden and jihadists to train in Saudi Arabia. And there's still a long way to go with some of these countries in the Middle East, but I believe that the bigger, what people are trying to avoid is doing business with China. So this whole tariff discussion allows for other countries to come to the United States and to come to President Trump and say, look, we want to be friends with you because we know that the United States is going to be fair. We know that the United States is going to have an honest, currency system, and that there's more trust for the United States than there is for China. So I think that's what is happening. It's not necessarily Trump pursuing them. It's other countries pursuing the United States because they see this wedge and an opportunity that China may be on the outs with the United States, which they are.
Right. Even though there is this at least temporary tariff agreement, and we'll see kind of where the negotiations with China goes. But this raises a question, I think, Congressman, that Trump seems to be negotiating a little bit independently with a lot of these more bilateral agreements that he prefers. And so should the U.S. reenter more multilateral trade deals and some of these negotiations, like, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or stay focused on bilateral agreements as Trump apparently is preferring?
Yeah, I think that, we were talking about that a little last night in Congress, that, as Trump makes these deals, for example, he's suspending the sanctions on Syria. Well, Joe Wilson, congressman from South Carolina, he's been working on this for a long time. And, Congress will have to, have those discussions. Does Congress actually, pass a bill to codify that, or does it just operate off of basically an executive order by the president? And there's some, on Syria, you could kind of go either way, because you could suspend them and see how the new president acts. And if he misbehaves, then you slap the sanctions back on and they don't go off. If they, if Congress does lift them, then Congress would also have to put them back on, which would take some time. So I think there's this kind of this good cop, bad cop together, where we can, Trump can make the deal. Let's see how things play out, especially like with Iran, because you can't trust Iran, Iran's leadership. They do want to have a bomb. And a lot of this goes back to Israel and to the United States. Things have to change in those countries on the religious front. They have to change on the political front. You cannot continue to kill your own people. You can't continue to have proxies in the Middle East to attack Israel. And you can't have any sort of, hatred towards the United States. So these all have to change. And I think Trump is willing to make the effort to do it, and that commerce is a better action than chaos, as he mentioned in his speech yesterday. But the proof is going to be on these folks in the long run, if they're going to behave, or if this is just a short-term lip service to a very strong president from the United States.
I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And it makes sense, I think, to our listeners and to the average conservative, that we would be very skeptical of Iran and wanting more of a firm negotiation style. But then I think there's some question of why we're trusting governments like Saudi Arabia and engaging in Syria. I mean, shouldn't Trump approach those countries with a little more skepticism than what seems like kind of a full embrace of these almost collaborative negotiations?
Yeah, and you know what? I think that he is. I think the administration is. I've had a lot of conversations with folks in the administration, And in it, there is a let's move ahead but have our eyes wide open mentality. You know, there's, of course, what we know about the new president in Syria is he's former al-Qaeda. I met him face-to-face. There's reason to believe, and, you know, he's saying the right things. He's doing a lot of the things that are necessary, but there's still a very checkered past. And is there real change? And I think that's, you know, that's what we all want, is we want to see people change. You know, we actually engaged in a war with Japan. Well, now they're one of our best, greatest allies. Same with Germany. So these countries can have bad leadership for a period of time, but hopefully they change. We want to give them that chance. But if they don't, just they need to know there's going to be major consequences from the United States.
And so let's turn to Congress's role, because there's also a lot of concern, I think, among conservatives, not just with the reconciliation and this big, beautiful bill and some of these things, but the fact that Congress doesn't seem to be at all in a hurry to help codify Trump's agenda and some of these great either negotiations or executive orders. And it seems like Congress is a lot of talk, no action. And when they're taking action, a lot of the GOP majority is not necessarily for anything genuinely conservative. And so where is Congress in action, actually taking steps to fulfill the Trump mandate?
Well, yeah, the, you know, big, beautiful bill is moving slowly. There's a lot of agreement on the executive orders from President Trump to codify those. But what's happening is, because it is one big bill, there's a lot of other facets that are becoming the hang-up. You know, the state and local tax deduction is a big hang-up. They call it SALT, is the acronym. And the states that benefit from that are states like New York, New Jersey, California, Illinois. You have these big spending states, liberal spending states, and the citizens there get a tax deduction from the federal government, basically because they're a high tax state. And so this is something that we are debating and wrestling over within our own conference, because we have about five Republican districts that are SALT districts, is what we call them. They actually get the benefit from the high tax states, and they get a deduction at the federal government level. Well, that means that states like Florida and Indiana and others, you know, we pick up the tab, because we're helping those folks there, and we're rewarding bad behavior. That's one of the hangups. The other hangups is over all of the Medicaid waivers. And I tell you, we had a meeting last night in the Freedom Caucus, and we were going over the Medicaid incentives. And this goes all the way back to Obamacare. And I mean, Jen, I know when Obamacare passed, we all talked about how this was the Democrats' plan to push everybody into a healthcare system for all. Well, Medicaid is that avenue. And we don't even hardly talk about Obamacare anymore. We talk about Medicaid because they have forced so many people onto Medicaid because the cost of insurance is through the roof and nobody can afford it. Well, now federal government is spending anywhere between, they match a state's dollar almost anywhere between $5 and $9 for Medicaid coverage, and it's breaking the bank. And this is something that is also going to have to be addressed. And so we've got a couple of issues like that that are part of the big, beautiful bill that is causing it to slow down. We're working through a lot of it this week. Hopefully within the next 2 weeks, we'll get a lot of clarity on this. And then also the Planned Parenthood funding. That is the other piece that conservatives, and myself especially, are focused on, is that we've got the trifecta in the House, Republicans in control, Senate Republicans are in control in the White House. Why do we continue to allow any sort of funding go to Planned Parenthood? Abortions are up because of the pill last year, and we've got to put a stop to this when we have the opportunity now.
Yeah, and on that last piece, before I go back to the big, beautiful bill's details, I'm glad that you mentioned the defunding of Planned Parenthood, and for that exact reason. Why is that not just a standalone issue and can go through maybe even a little more rapidly than working out some of these other details, since Republicans have the trifecta? It seems like that should just be a very quick priority for Congress to say, we're just going to stop funding Planned Parenthood.
Well, I would like to think that it would be a good standalone. But I'm not convinced, Jenna, because I don't know that all Republicans would vote for it to defund it. You know, Democrats definitely would not. And because of our close margin, my suspicion is there's going to be probably a handful of Republicans that would vote against that. And so that's what Speaker Mike Johnson and the leadership team are having to, you know, navigate and trying to see where do we have the votes for it now, or do we have to put it in the big, beautiful bill to get it passed? And so there's a lot of this puzzle piecing together of how do we move this whole thing together. And that's why, you know, I do think the big, beautiful bill is the right strategy, because we can, you know, hopefully defund Planned Parenthood within that. And then if SALT has to be a trade-off for these Republican members in these other states, there has to be some sort of trade-off. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I know the leadership team in the House is trying to navigate all that right now.
Yeah, and that's a good perspective that some of the concerns of the Big Beautiful Bill are still being addressed. It's not at its final stages because Congressman Chip Roy, you know, friend of the show, he posted a big thread, and I won't read the whole thing here, but I encourage listeners to go and follow him at Chip Roy Texas TX and read this, because he says in part, this is what's coming regardless of the Big Beautiful Bill's details. And the first thing he says is there will be enormous pressure to simply get in line to support the bill because it does a number of things we support. But regardless of the merits, if we object, we'll be called grandstanders and that we must comply by influencers and some elected officials. It does seem like at least the administration standpoint is pushing this regardless of the details. And so for listeners who may want to call members of Congress's office and encourage them to make some of these adjustments, what do you think is the most effective way to do that? And where specifically are the negotiations that we could help influence?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned Chip Roy, because he's one of the smartest members in the House and is full of information. So your listeners should definitely keep up with what Chip posts, because he's on the Rules Committee as well as the Budget Committee, and he's definitely has great information as part of the Freedom Caucus. But that's, he's right. I mean, you know, having one big beautiful bill can be, you know, is a good strategy to get the conservative amendments that we want and the conservative policies that we want. But we also know there's going to be some ugly in it, too. And that's where, you know, I like a standalone strategy. But in some cases, just like on the Planned Parenthood defunding, I don't know that all Republicans would vote for it on a standalone. So if we have the one big, beautiful bill strategy and one bill is moving, I think we can get there. So your listeners should really be calling their representatives and their senators. And I mean, really just asking for support to defund Planned Parenthood. That is first and top priority, I believe. There's no reason for us to be funding them. And then also, we've got to you got to be telling them you've got to reduce spending and fixing our healthcare system. That's the one that's going to break us, because there's no good solution right now to lower the cost of healthcare in this country. I mean, you know, my wife and I have talked about it before being back in Congress, just the cost of healthcare. You go to get some sort of healthcare service, and you wonder, do we even have insurance? And you know, high deductibles, high premiums, the cost of healthcare has gone through the roof. But the reason is because the government funds it, and healthcare providers and insurance companies continue to take advantage of that. And that's what has to be addressed. I don't think that'll be done in the big, beautiful bill, but at least we can start making changes to it through that.
Yeah, and speaking of some members of the GOP conference not voting to defund Planned Parenthood, which I think a lot of listeners, including myself, find that very offensive to the notion of conservatism, to what the platform of the Republican Party is, you know, all of those things that we can object to. Do you think that there is any strategy in having it a standalone bill just to get people on the record for purposes of the midterms, perhaps? I mean, this is an issue that has been at the fore for a long time with conservatives, with Republicans. Trump's first term, he was very adamantly pro-life, and this seems to be something that should be a priority. And if members of the GOP aren't willing to stand behind it, and they can kind of hide behind the entire focus of the big, beautiful bill, then maybe we aren't doing our research enough to know how and where to vote in the primaries.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point, you know, that vote does, you know, likely happen once we see that it's not going to be a part of the big package. Then once we get through and kind of say, okay, you know what, it's not going to happen this term, then you put it up for a vote by itself. So that way everybody knows, you know, where people are landing. There was a time in the House that we could have passed it pretty easily with a strong pro-life majority, but we didn't have the Senate. And, you know, the Senate wasn't going to pass it because Democrats were in control, or they were going to stop it with the 60 vote cloture vote. So that's why we have a very narrow window right now to pass the defunding of Planned Parenthood with the big, beautiful bill, because it only needs 51 votes in the Senate to get to the president's desk. And but I agree with you. At some point, if we see that it's going to fail and not be a part of the big package, then you have to have a standalone vote to find out where members are at. And but I just sense that, you know, we're probably 5 to 6 votes short of it actually passing in the House, because our margin is so close. And and some Republicans come from, you know, for whatever their opinion is, if it's their personal opinion or if it's because of their district, there's some that would probably vote against it. But I think that's where we have to, you know, move very slowly, making sure the whole package is together, because if we want the policy at the end of the day, keeping it part of the big, beautiful bill makes the most sense unless we just see that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and we have to take a break here, but Congressman Marlon Stutzman, really appreciate your commentary, and I agree with you. If we can get the policy done, then, you know, who cares about the 6 or so that may have voted against it? That's ultimately what we want, and we can look for those clues and figure out the primaries another day. Certainly, we want the policy, and it's really sad that there are GOP members that would vote against defunding Planned Parenthood. We do need to look into that, but hopefully, overall, if these negotiations can continue and get to where conservatives and especially Christians should want them to be, that's ultimately the best outcome. But thank you so much for dropping by per the usual. And please follow Representative Stutzman at Rep Stutzman on X, Instagram, Truth Social, Facebook, all of the social media. And you can get highlights and his commentary there on the days that he's not on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, let's turn to Christians that are facing rampant persecution across the globe for simply acknowledging the name of Jesus. This is from Congressman Riley Moore on the House floor, and he posted on X, "I just addressed this alarming reality on the House floor and plan to soon introduce a resolution condemning the violence against Christians." So the congressman joins us now. And Congressman, what exactly is going on across the globe? I think we're aware generally of persecution against Christians, but specifically what your resolution would target and condemn.
Well, hey, Jenna, thanks so much for having me on. And, you know, this has been obviously a pervasive problem that's been going on now for decades and decades, if not centuries. But it's really come to a head, particularly when you look in the Middle East and places like Africa, and the persecution, and persecution is probably a polite word to put, but just outright murder of Christians in these regions of the world, Nigeria being one of the most glaring examples of this. Obviously, we've seen, unfortunately, scores of them murdered around Ash Wednesday, around Easter, around a lot of the holy days. We've seen just even a few years back in Egypt, Coptic Christians were killed there as well. A church was attacked. And we've also seen this now in Syria and other places in the Middle East that's going on. And it seems like nobody cares. Like, nobody is talking about this issue that our brothers and sisters in Christ are being murdered And it's just like we overlook it. You know, we talk about all these other groups around the world that are persecuted and these terrible things have happened to them. And absolutely, every human life is valuable. Don't disagree with that. But nobody is talking about this. And my floor speech that you referenced and this resolution that I'm going to introduce is going to hopefully shine a light on this and elevate that conversation and raise the volume on it. And hopefully have people focused on this issue of our brothers and sisters in Christ that are being killed around the globe for just saying the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
And I so appreciate you bringing attention to this issue, because you're right, with so much of the emphasis right now on the economy and tariffs and trade and the big, beautiful bill and all of these other things, we're missing a really significant and important ongoing issue. And you mentioned specifically Christians that are being persecuted in the Middle East. Is the State Department addressing any of this as President Trump is currently in the Middle East? I mean, is this part of, to your knowledge at all, part of any of these ongoing negotiations?
Well, I'm not sure if it's part of his visit right now, but I do know in the Trump administration, specifically under Secretary of State Marco Rubio, he has highlighted these issues and has discussed them. This is something that I think that is also close to his heart as well. So the conversation, I'd say, is being had at the administration level, but Congress is generally silent on this. And I think we all, as the United States government, need to be speaking about this and condemning these killings and persecution that is happening around the globe.
Absolutely. And I'm speaking with Congressman Riley Moore from the great state of West Virginia. And this resolution that you're introducing, is this one step toward perhaps other legislation or other action that Congress can take? Because certainly this is an issue that Congress should care about. But it seems like without some of those negotiations in place, even just a condemnation is one thing, but action is something that we desperately need.
Well, no, I do hope that this is a first step in escalation as it relates to engagement from the United States on this issue. So, but first, we need to make people aware of it. It's just nobody's even really talking about it. I mean, we've heard some folks over time talking about it, but not in a type of consensus from Congress, particularly the Republican Party. Obviously, I think some people are aware, but there have been individuals that are really highlighting this out there. I would just highlight one person specifically, Jonathan Rumi, as we know, the actor who plays Jesus Christ in The Chosen, has put out this short film about these martyred Coptic Christians that were killed by Islamic terrorists. And I think that's done a lot to try to highlight the issue that's going on. And I would say the new Pope, Pope Leo XIV, the Holy Father, has recently put out a statement just, I believe, today, or it was yesterday, the time change, I'm not exactly sure. It was either yesterday or today, talking about the persecution of Christians around the globe. So there are some voices that are entering into this space, which is great. Jonathan Rumi has done a tremendous job highlighting this in his own personal capacity. But I think this is something that Congress needs to be speaking about as well.
Absolutely. And I appreciate, like I said, you bringing attention to this issue. And certainly our American Family Radio Network audience cares about this issue very much as a Christian base. And so what can we do concretely to help push Congress in that direction and encourage some concrete steps to address this issue?
Well, and certainly we'll flag that for you. Urge your congressman to go sponsor. Lucky it will be taken up on the floor.
Okay, and we lost you just for a few seconds there at the end, so if you wouldn't mind repeating that, I apologize.
Yeah, no, sorry about that. Once we introduce the resolution, please call your congressman. urge them to co-sponsor the resolution once it comes out, because the more co-sponsors that we have, the more likely that it will be taken up on the House floor and we'll get it up for a vote.
Yeah, and hopefully we will see more of the GOP members, unlike perhaps what I was talking to with Congressman Stutzman in the last segment on, you know, some GOP members not wanting to vote to defund Planned Parenthood, for example, and, you know, some of these other priorities that really should be within the GOP as the allegedly conservative party. Hopefully we would see the full conference in both the House and the Senate support something like this. But more broadly, Representative Moore, in terms of, you know, religious liberty and advocating for Christians who are being persecuted, from a U.S. foreign policy perspective, how does the U.S. balance these kind of strategic alliances with countries like Saudi Arabia and Syria, and, you know, seeing some of these trade deals that the president is focused on, which do frankly have troubling records on religious freedom? I mean, how do we balance that from a perspective that Trump is clearly wanting to make these countries our allies, at least in a trade sense, but they're clearly not our allies on some of these broader religious liberty questions?
Well, certainly, no doubt about that. I think what President Trump is doing, and he's doing a great job at that, is trying to engage with these countries that, now not Saudi Arabia, but some of the others in the region, as we all know all too well, we've been in the project of nation building and trying to force them into some type of democratic regime, which they've outright rejected for the most part, which has not gone well. I mean, all these nation building projects actually just destabilize the region even more. If you look at the amount of Christians who were in Iraq before we invaded Iraq, it was well over a million. There's only a few hundred thousand left now who have been driven out of the country. And unfortunately, we contributed to the destabilization of that and the amount of danger and risk for Christians in that country specifically. So peace is, I think, what President Trump is looking for. So obviously, these are building blocks and steps towards that. And I think that obviously we want this to be part of the conversation as well. But I think establishing a relationship, trade and otherwise, with them enables us to have those types of conversations rather than trying to dictate to some of these countries exactly what they're going to do in their own international affairs or otherwise. But if we can do it in a way where we have an established relationship and we're seeking peace in that region of the world, I think they will be, certainly my view, I think they'll be more open to that.
Yeah, and that certainly matches the tenor and rationale of Trump's speech there in the Middle East, and suggesting that these leaders know what's best for their own countries, just like he would certainly say, and I think the voters would agree with him, that he has an America first priority and what's best for leadership for his nation. And all of that makes sense. And the State Department under Trump's first term, it was the first time that they held a ministerial on religious freedom. And that was a great opportunity to address some of these questions. Do you see that priority still in the second administration and also in Congress to truly emphasize religious liberty in foreign policy, but also even just domestically as well?
I do. I do see that. And obviously, as we know, the Christian faith, our faith, and that's what we want, and that's what we want for our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world, is to be able to live in peace and to be able to practice their faith without fear of being killed and persecuted. So I think at the end of the day, it all folds into this desire to have more peace around the world. And I do believe President Trump, contrary to what the Democrats might say here, is a peacemaker. I mean, this is what he wants, peace deals, whether you're talking about Ukraine, whether you're talking about what's been going on in Syria, India, Pakistan. that is what he is trying to seek. And certainly, I think there is going to be a emphasis on religious liberty.
That's really encouraging to hear. So, Congressman Riley Moore, thank you so much. And please keep us updated on when your resolution drops so that we can support that. We can encourage others and, of course, our AFR family to support that. You can follow at Rep. Riley Moore on X and see all of those updates there. And we need to be praying for the persecuted Christians around the world and doing our part, of course, to support religious liberty. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.